The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Pat Williams, the tournament chairman for the 2023 WM Phoenix Open, will be with us. We're going to do some golf today. And then Vern Lundquist. Vern is going to be with us. We've had him on before, his book. But came out yesterday that Vern is returning for another year to be in the tower at 16 at the Masters. And I called producer Steve and said, hey, well, I actually texted him. And because Steve is Steve, he just went and found him. He's the bulldog. I think it's just calling Steve the bulldog. So we're going to have Vern Lundquist at about 10:35. Pat Williams, changes that may be coming to the Open. Remember after the two hole-in-ones, all the consternation about the PGA not too happy and what do they do with beer raining down and so on and so forth. So Pat Williams, I'm going to talk to Pat, get real with him about some things around the Open with Super Bowl here next year too, and then Vern. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their ongoing support. I watched the Suns last night, and Devin Booker did not have a great offensive game. I was more disappointed in the final moments of the game where he had two fouls that were fouls. And I don't mind playing aggressive. I don't mind any of that. And he's going to have nights where he doesn't shoot particularly well. He was 5 for 21. Happens. Not banging on him. They won the game. They're in position for their 62nd, or actually, they have 62 wins. They're in position, if they win tomorrow night against Memphis, to set the all-time record. They're a perfect record when they lead going into the fourth quarter. Just on and on and on. And yeah, the Warriors did not have Steph Curry last night. Suns did not have Cam Johnson last night. JaVale McGee. I mean, so they're not two teams that are at full strength. But I would agree with Richard Jefferson. I was watching at the end of the game, he and Dave Pasch. And Richard said, how great would it be, he proclaimed it, how great it would be if it were the Suns and Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And I am right there on that. That would be great theater. So Klay Thompson wasn't very good last night either. He was 5 for 21. So late regular season game. Suns have everything wrapped up, everything clinched. They're on the road to Memphis tomorrow, and they play at Oklahoma City over the weekend. And then they have the Lakers next week, and that's pretty much it. The playoffs finally are right here, right around the corner, and figure out who they're going to play and the play-ins and all that. So they're going to have some time off to rest up. And, you know, all in all, it was a pretty interesting regular season NBA game, and there aren't many of those for me. Bruce Arians quitting in Tampa Bay and moving over to the front office, I would find it very hard to believe that anybody is going to go down the path that Tom Brady torpedoed Bruce Arians. You know, that theory came out yesterday, immediately. You know, hot take. Everybody have a hot take? Got a hot take? Hot take. Oh, it must have been Tom Brady torpedoed Bruce Arians. Or maybe it's, I don't know, Bruce Arians is closer to 70. How many coaches in the NFL are still doing it at 70? Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, not many. And maybe it's just like, you know, taking some time away from this. And I can hand the baton off to Todd Bowles. Like Bruce Arians, when people talk about Bruce and his impact and what he's done through the years in the National Football League, he had 11 people on his staff that were either black or female this year. And what did we just go through earlier this week with the NFL about, well, we have to incentivize, we have to have at least one black assistant coach on the offensive side of the football. We're in like 2022 now, aren't we? It's really, this is where you guys are. You're now just saying to make this happen. Whereas back in the day, Al Davis was all over this issue. He was in front of it. A lot of people didn't like Al Davis. I respect Al Davis, respect the hell out of Al Davis. You know, what Bruce has done down in Tampa Bay off the field in terms of coaching, forget about the Sunday afternoon between 1 and 4. Forget about all that stuff. Just look at the people that he came in contact with. The people who mentored him, Bear Bryant. He was on the coaching staff for Mike Ditka. He was on the coaching staff with Chuck Knoll. Like some of the legends of the game. And then he's got Tom Moore still bumping around with him on the sidelines. I respect the hell out of Tom. And so I see these guys, and it's so much about, well, Brady must have pushed him out the door versus, guys, do you really know? You just think that's the case in this day and age? Maybe it's just Bruce Arians woke up and said, I think this is the right move to make. And he's going to go across the hall, and he's going to do his thing in Tampa Bay. You know, Bruce Arians here was great. We did stuff with Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians was fine with media. He bristled at some things. It was interesting when he was here. It wasn't predictable. It wasn't like I didn't feel as though there was a hand on the pulse when Bruce was here. And I can't say that's always the case in this day and age in coaching. Can't. Bruce Arians worked with Lynn Swann, Barry Sanders, Edgerrin James, Marshall Faulk. I can go on and on and on about him and gush and openly gush. Coach him hard, hug him harder. That was the saying that Bear Bryant gave him. So, you know, what happened yesterday makes for an even more interesting offseason in the NFL for sure. It's been fascinating. You guys know I bag on the NFL on things I think are phony and put in place and media driven and media savvy, and let's squash all these other leagues. But at the end of the day, I'm about the people. I'm really about getting to know the people. And Bruce is one of those people that we had access to. It wasn't just forced and have a narrative behind it. He was pretty open. And I like that about him quite a bit. You know, other than that, I'm just about the Masters next week. I'm getting into that mindset. It's the Suns. Yeah, we've talked about Coach K. I had two guests on Monday about it and how great it's going to be. If I will say this, if Mike Krzyzewski does lose to North Carolina, there's not a worse way to go out than that. There really isn't. After this beautiful song that's come together. And here it is, the most hated rival. And here it is in his final game. Like, Tar Heel fans will love this if they beat him. They will own Duke fan forever. Yep, we ended Coach K's run in the semifinals of the national championship game. Nothing is more painful than that. And on the other side, it's just Mike Krzyzewski did what he had to do. He got through his arch rival, North Carolina. Like, when they make the movie about this, because they're going to. When they write the book about this, because they're going to. It's going to be the lead up to the game against North Carolina, how the game unfolds on Saturday night. And, you know, if he ends up losing and this is it, and he walks off the floor, it wouldn't surprise me if he's like, you know, pull a Bruce Arians, except do it in reverse. I'm staying. I'm not going to have my career end on a loss to my most hated rival. That's not happening. So, not saying that's going to happen, but so there's that. And then the Padres are close to acquiring an all-star outfielder from the Pirates. And I kind of sit here and say, hello, guys. Anybody home in downtown Phoenix? Anybody? Okay? It's great you gave Ketel Marte an extension. Might need a player or two around him. Could use a third baseman. Could use more help on the rotation. And on and on and on. So the Padres are getting Brian Reynolds from the Pirates, an all-star outfielder. And it's just the National League West keeps loading up. And our hometown heroes on the diamond are just kind of like, this is what we have. And this is, you know, fans embrace it. And I'll go. I will go. I will buy tickets, or if a friend says, come with me, I'll go with the friend. I will buy tickets, go with a friend. My days of calling down there and saying, I need three or four free ones 20 years ago, 25 years ago, just because I was so tied in with them then, I'm not doing that now. But if there's time for me to go pay to watch, I will go to watch, because I just like baseball. I'll keep score, I'll have a beer, I'll suck down a hot dog and all that. If Tiger does play in the Masters next week, it was Scott Van Pelt who had this line of, if Tiger plays next week, every other player could, I'm paraphrasing, every other player could play nude and no one would notice. So if you're one of those, like, I don't want Tiger there, lighten up, enjoy life a little bit. Life's too short. Don't give yourself an ulcer over Tiger Woods showing up at Augusta. It'd be fun. It would be great. And it's next week. All right, Pat Williams comes up next, and I've got some questions for Pat because he's the new tournament chairman of the 2023 WM Phoenix Open. Just on, all right, How are you going to handle this? How are you going to handle that? We'll have Pat Williams and then the great Vern Lundquist. I'm Brad Sussmad. All right, as promised, there is a new tournament chairman for the WM Phoenix Open. And because golf lives year-round here, this isn't just something that we get excited about, at least I don't, in January and early February. It is a year-round deal. Like this last week, the Special Olympics group of Arizona benefited greatly from the work that happens from the Thunderbirds, $1 million donation for a new state office and distribution center in Goodyear. And I'm one of those that it's easy to point all that stuff out in, again, late January, February, but I think in late March, early April, it's these guys work at it year round. And Pat Williams is the new tournament chairman, and he's going to be in charge of a lot of things. We'll get to golf in a minute. I just want to first welcome you to the show and dive on in with me and chop it up, as I like to say. And how did this come about, Pat? Let's start there.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan of the show, Brad. I do watch it, and I'm a fan. I actually come from a family where my father was a high school football coach in New Mexico. So all the coverage you do for the state of Arizona is fun for me to watch. But and I still follow. But I'll tell you, yeah, you know, in my role, I've been lucky enough and fortunate to be a Thunderbird for about the past 7 or 8 years. And last year as the assistant tournament chairman, I'm ready to roll in as the tournament chairman this year. And, you know, I was asked to step up and perform the obligation, and I'm looking forward to doing it. But you started perfectly. The Special Olympics donation was just last week. And you're right. I mean, a lot of the community sees what happens in the tournament week, but it's really a lot of the work. Really, most of the work happens outside of the week of the tournament, and giving donations to the local community and what we were able to do for Special Olympics is really fun.
You know, and it's fine to have a photo op. It's fine to have the big check. But I'm one of those that it's when people aren't watching. And I know that the Thunderbirds do a lot when people aren't watching. By that, yeah, they're going out and doing things that they're not saying, you know, we're the greatest ever. Doesn't mean that there shouldn't be the proper attention. But I think that in this day and age where there is a lot of self-gratification, the Thunderbirds do a very good job of just saying, let's go do our thing. Let's go kick butt and take names.
Yeah, I'll resist temptation to try to do the patting on the back now, but there, I appreciate you saying it. And there is a lot of work, as I said earlier, that's unseen. And it really is the most fun and rewarding part for us.
So there's people who are going to watch this, Pat, and are watching now. They're saying, okay, so how does a guy like Pat Williams get to this point in his career? You have to be part of the community, and you are that on the real estate side. So take it from there on the business side and how that got you to at least get a foot in the door to be a Thunderbird.
Yeah, I think it had a little bit to do with it, but candidly, Brad, probably just a small portion. As you mentioned, I'm in the real estate business and the commercial side of the business, but you know, really, you know, as a Thunderbird, you're asked to be a volunteer in the organization. And I was asked to be a volunteer, and we have Thunderbirds that are all walks of life. Our tournament chairman, Michael Golding, from last year, is a physician. We have attorneys, we have firemen, we have folks that were former police officers. So it's really all walks of life. I do think that we try to get a good, call it, mix of the community and reach of the community. And I was fortunate to be asked. And, you know, it's a group of 55 active folks in the community that really work throughout the year. And then we have what we call life birds that are a little bit older. You'll see more of them during the week of the tournament that participate. And so, you know, there's several hundred of us in the community now that it's an 87-year-old organization that, you know, the purpose of the organization is to raise funds to give back to the community.
Your first job as a Thunderbird was what?
Parking. Yep. Parking. So generally, you know, you're going to get a job for 1 or 2 years. I was the parking assistant, and then I was the parking chairman. And honestly, it's outside the gates, actually, as you would expect. But I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And then from there, what was your progression in terms of duties? I want to give the fans kind of an idea of what.
Yeah, no, certainly. Yeah, I'll go through it. So started as parking, and then I was fortunate. My second job was the player liaison for 2 years. And so that job entails, you know, particularly the week of the tournament, doing, you know, you're essentially a administrator for the players and what the help with what player needs are and wants, whether that's, you know, sometimes hotel accommodations or tickets for family and friends, maybe it's the type of food and beverage they, you know, might want during the week of the tournament. So I did that for 2 years and then have followed it up with a couple other just kind of loose jobs, 1 year jobs with the organization, followed by assistant tournament chairman and now tournament chairman.
When they tapped you on the shoulder, or is it you putting in your name to move up to this type of position? How did that happen?
You know, generally, you know, you don't really ask for your job. And so you set it well, you'll get tapped for each job that you get. And they're all, it's not, you know, it's easy to sound cliche. It's not a cliche. They're all very important. I mean, our jobs range from having someone who's running the 16th, you know, the iconic 16th hole. We have three folks who work on that annually. We have people who are in charge of concessions, in charge of signs, in charge of volunteers, you name it. There's somebody in charge of it. And so, you know, you don't ask. If you get tapped on the shoulder, you say yes, and you do the best job you can and try to make it better than the person who did it before you.
Who's the person that has a hole at the quiet sign at 16 on Pro-Am day? I want to talk to that person because that's a thankless job.
That's a tough job.
Good luck with that.
Yep.
Pat Williams with us for a couple of minutes. Tournament chairman for the 2023 WM Phoenix Open at TPC Scottsdale. All right. What is your laundry list at the top of things you want to get done, need to get done as we sit here in spring and talk about next year's event?
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously when we think about next year's event, every year it's, you know, a huge undertaking. Next year will be no different. We're running right along with the Super Bowl next year. That's the one difference in this year's tournament. So our community gets to, show itself to not only the golf fans, but also the football fans, which is a worldwide community, as well as golf. And so I think next year we're working in collaboration with the Super Bowl host committee. We're going to try to make the experience for our customers and fans better than it was last year. There'll be a host of changes this year. We're going to have a new entry to the tournament. We're going to have some changes to some, you know, hospitality, you know, venues that we have. And overall, what we're really trying to do is make the customer experience better. We host a lot of people, Brad, as you know,
yep.
And in doing that, there's a lot of logistics to go with it. So as we grow the tournament, we need to make the experience for the fans better each year. And, that's really what we're focused on.
It's interesting you bring up the NFL. So obviously I do a lot of that. And Peter King was asking me about the 16th hole. I'm like, hey, next week when it's Super Bowl week, because he's been out here for Super Bowl four, like, just come with me to 16. You'll have a column and you'll see a lot of football jerseys. And so, you know, working with Judd over at the Super Bowl committee and yourself, it's not like, oh, they have their event, we have ours. You have to be together, right?
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of the same customers and, you know, this isn't the first time that the Super Bowl has, you know, we've completed our tournament the same day the Super Bowl's been
correct.
Here.
Yep.
I think the collaboration is good. There will be people who will attend for sure both events. And then there are folks who just go to the Super Bowl every year that this year will want to go to the Phoenix Open, the WM Phoenix Open. And there are folks who just go to the WM Phoenix Open every year that this year will have an opportunity to maybe attend some Super Bowl events as well. So our community is big enough. We both have the same goals of raising money for the community. And we're absolutely collaborating. It'll be really exciting. There's going to be guests next year, I'm certain, that will come to the Phoenix Open. You just mentioned Peter King, who maybe hasn't been before. And that's really cool and exciting for us. We get to show our venue and what we do to folks who haven't seen it before.
Yeah, I think, you know, you throw in the Coyotes decide to play a home game. Does ASU have home basketball? Do the Suns have games downtown?
Right.
And I remember the last time that the Super Bowl was here at the same time, and it was organized chaos in a good way. You know, it's not something that we shy away from.
I'll tell you, Brad, I mean, even today as we sit here, hotel rooms are hard to find already.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you mentioned, it's organized chaos, but it is organized and good for us. The city's done this before and we're going to get to do it again because I think we're good at it. And, you know, we work well together.
How far back can you pull the curtain on a new entrance or some of the things that you mentioned?
Well, not too far back, to be honest with you. We have a new affiliation with DraftKings, the PGA Tour does.
Yep.
And so DraftKings is going to have, you know, a presence at the Phoenix Open going forward. And as part of that, we're hopeful that where the entrance sits today will be, you know, a venue for them. And as we you know, as they talk about potentially building that venue, it's going to transition our entrance a little bit. So I can't, like I said, peel back too much of the curtain. The idea is to make it a smoother, easier experience for the fans, and getting in and out, you know, is always tough when you're talking about that many people. So it will be done very well. It's been in the plans for a long time, and we're excited to reveal it. It will, Brad, candidly be a couple year project. When you're talking about building anything, particularly nowadays, it doesn't happen quickly. And so it's something we'll work on over the next couple of years.
Yeah. Parts are on an ocean. That's right. Out on an ocean somewhere and all that. No, I get that. And then you would know, given where you are in your business side. Pat Williams with us for a few minutes, tournament chairman, 2023 WM Phoenix Open. The questions I get asked or were asked out there, what are they going to do about hole-in-one celebrations at 16 so players don't get hurt, the tour and all that stuff? Have you had meetings on that? Where does that stand, Pat, as we sit here today?
Yeah, we have. I think it's a great question, Brad. And we, you know, the tour is very involved in those discussions. The tour, I would tell you, I know is a very big fan of our tournament. Mm-hmm. They love the fan engagement. They love what's happened at the 16th hole. But just like us, player safety is a priority for them, right? And so as exciting as the hole-in-one on Saturday was, as exciting as it was on Sunday, you know, we have to do a better job of educating our fans that throwing beer cans or full beer cans into, you know, onto a green can be dangerous, right? I mean, and pick your sport, Brad. I mean, there are people drinking beer at football games, at baseball games, at basketball, but you don't see the same type of probably reaction to a big shot or a touchdown or whatever it might be, a home run. So we're going to react to it. It's very likely that we'll probably won't have a lot of canned beer at the tournament this year. Doesn't mean our fans aren't going to enjoy a beverage if they want one, but we'll probably have an alternative form of how we provide it to them, maybe in a plastic cup as an example. And so we are working on it very closely, and it'll be great for the fans as well.
So what I'm thinking is, like, hole-in-one happens, a net just falls down over the hole. Just somebody push a button, okay?
Right.
We might, it's going to be the bat button. We're going to push it just once or twice in a tournament.
Well, Brad, you're on the right track. We talked about, you know, is a touchdown gets scored in the field or extra point net goes up, right? Do you have a net that comes out? We won't do that, kidding aside, but we are going to create an environment that is safe for our fans and our players.
Recruiting players, that is not something that just happens like, oh, I think I'm going to go out to Torrey Pines and say, do you want to play in a few weeks? It's a year-round work. And having seen the tournament, covered the tournament, been around the tournament for my 30 years in the Valley, how does that work for you in your role?
Yeah, so recruiting players is extremely important, right? And we want to have one of the best fields on tour every year. This year, our field was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping for the same for next year. Look, our tournament is unique and everyone knows that. And I would tell you, Brad, that 95% or more of the player feedback is outstanding. We do our best, not just the week, you know, when you see them on course, but providing an environment for them that's enjoyable for their families and for their guests and for their friends. And, you know, recruiting them, part of that is just creating a nice experience. But it's difficult. And I think each player is different. It's not always the venue. A lot of these players will be very particular about the golf course that they want to play, what suits their game, what their schedule looks like. So we're going to do our best to get a great field. I would love to have a field that equaled what we did this year in 2022, if not better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are out talking to the players. And part of what you already, you know, brought up as it relates to the 16th hole and the hole of one and player safety and all those things, we address with the players. We make sure that they that we're going to provide that safe environment. Like I said, 95% of them embrace it and really love it.
Is it the agent that you call? Is it going to the range at a tournament on a Tuesday or a Wednesday as you travel around the country? Because you can't just sit here in Phoenix and do Zooms and say, please come to our tournament. It's got to be hands-on in front of people.
Yeah, it's mostly through agents and managers and representatives. I mean, we have a lot of tour players that live in our community. Yep. And so we benefit from that. And so we do have a lot of relationships with tour players already. And I think just word of mouth amongst them becomes very important. And by the way, Brad, these tour players, I mean, I wish I could tell you all the times you said that, you know, you started the show with some things that you don't see from the Thunderbirds outside the week of the tournament. It's the same with the tour players with us here in the community. I mean, the times that we ask for tour players to maybe help at an event or a junior golf event or a first tee event, they're always great. And just creating that type of relationship allows us to have communication and say, okay, here's what we're doing next year for player safety. Here's what we're doing for maybe your families, as I mentioned before. And word of mouth, it works and it spreads.
Anything else you want to add that I haven't asked you? You feel like, you know, Brad, you missed this, or here's something I feel like is coming up in this next year that I'm really geeked up about.
No, I think you covered it, Brad. I think, you know, I am very excited and humbled and honored to be, you know, the tournament chair this year. And you know, the Thunderbirds are going to rally like we do every year, and we'll provide a great tournament. And we're just excited for the opportunity to, you know, show Phoenix maybe in a little bit larger scale this year with the Super Bowl here.
Good stuff. I appreciate your time and your insight. Look forward to seeing you down the road, Pat. Thanks.
Okay, Brad. Thank you.
It's Pat Williams with us, tournament chairman for the 2023 WM Phoenix Open. Vern Lundquist is on the other side. He's got a tough act to follow. Pat was great. We're back next. All right, as promised, I saw the note of Vern Lundquist being confirmed by CBS that he is going to come back to do the Masters telecast. So I went to the library and said, I got to get the book. I got to bring the book out.
Oh, you're the best.
Because I had Vern on last year when the book came out. And I have to tell you, the amount of feedback of people saying, it's just so good, Brad, to see Vern Lundquist. And I was so pleased to see you. And by the way, if you have not gotten the book, I'll do it another time. And I'll probably do it like five more times in this segment. But make sure you pick up the
Believe
book.
Believe it or not, it's on Amazon still. There it was published in October of 17. There so, you know, and just an aside about the book. When it was published, we never made the New York Times top 10. But 1 week after that book came out, Michelle Obama released her book, which stayed in the first spot for about 2 years. So we were like a whisper passing into the
climb
night.
Climb the ladder.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's that Lundquist book? It's next to the Obama book. I can't find the Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're back. You're doing this 37th Masters, Vern.
Yeah. And I'm thrilled to be able to do it. I really, really am. My first one was in 1983. And I worked there subsequently every year up until we had a regime change in 97. I think I told you the story last time we chatted. I stayed with CBS after we lost the NFL. Mm-hmm. So I was there in 94. At the end of 95, we all had to take a reduced salary because we had no National Football League. And at the end of 95, I succumbed to an offer and went to Turner Sports. And I enjoyed my 2.5 years there. But the new boss, who's still my current boss, Sean McManus, said to some of his underlings, why is he on our air? Because he's working for Turner now. Mm. And so that I missed Tiger's first win, and I missed Mark O'Meara's win in 98. And then we got the NFL back, and we were in Nagano, Japan for the Olympics during an ice make in the men's figure skating finals. And Sean and his number two guy at the time, Tony Petitti, walked into where Scott Hamilton and I were, and he said, are you ready to come home? Mm. And after I got back up off my knees, I said, boy, am I ever. So then I came back in 99. And in my view, Brad, I'd never left the company because we were counter-programming at CBS against whatever Fox and NBC and ABC or ESPN were throwing up with figure skating, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. So I did 20 shows each of those years that I was gone under contract to CBS, but Sean didn't see it that way at the time. And But I've been back and you know, you talk about day to day, I'm year to year. Cause I'll never see 80 again and, look fine down there, but it's, so know, we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, the business of broadcast, when you pull the curtain back and you talk about just figure skating and how you did it, it drew numbers. It still draws big numbers.
Oh gosh, yeah. As much as it did. You know, they not as many numbers, not as high a number as mm-hmm. they did. Back over my shoulder, I can see a plaque that I have with the two mic flags from the Wednesday women's final with Tanya and Nancy, women's short program.
Wow.
Tanya and Nancy, and the ladies' final. When Oksana Bayul edged out Nancy controversially. And I was given those by our production supervisor, and he said, you might want to keep these. And the estimated number of viewers for Wednesday night was 126 million.
Wow.
Now, those are staggering numbers. Yeah. And it's been lowered since then. And then the Friday night, it was 120 million. And Scott Hamilton said to me after we had gotten through all of it, boy, I'm sure glad I didn't know that many eyeballs were watching us. Because, you know, you're as much as we're used to the idea, you are too, of appearing in front of a camera.
Yep.
That's a staggering number. And it was all the hype. You know, all the hype leading up to Tanya and Nancy taking the ice.
Speaking of hype, here's the book. Just so you guys know, I'm going to keep bringing this up.
Do this every week?
Why? Sure. Do I get a commission? Bring Lundquist with us for a few minutes. Okay, so what is your role going to be at Augusta? 16 Tower?
Okay. Well, 16 and 6, which I've had those two. Since 2000, when I came back, Sean McDonough, who very prominent ESPN broadcaster and a very good friend, was still under contract at CBS, and he was working the 16th hole. So in 99, when I did come back to CBS, I worked at 14, and then Sean left the company at the end of 99, then they moved me to 16. So I've been there ever since. And I've jokingly said, and Augusta National hadn't bought it yet, that when time comes, I just like a forklift and a platform and have you guys hoist me up there and I'll roll over and find a chair and sit up and then do the broadcast. There is a legend. Henry Longhurst, this will be my 22nd year at 16. Mm. So I do hold that record. But the guy I surpassed was the inimitable Henry Longhurst, a very, very high cultured Brit. Mm. And he talked like this. And there are rumors that they did have a hoist, and he would get up there, roll off the elevated platform into the tower with his bottle of gin.
That is great.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's true. Retired in the mid-70s. So
when the phone call comes, was it a phone call? Was it an email? It just the phone rings and you look at it and you say, I think I know what this phone call is about to come back this year. Did you know? And what was that like?
It wasn't a phone call. We all have to have an agent in this part of broadcasting. And I've got one I've had since 83, Bob Rosen, who lives in a very, very nice home in Palm Springs, which I helped pay for. Bob told me you're going to get it. I went to CBS in the fall of 82. To do college football, essentially, and basketball. Mm-hmm. And in December of that year, I got a call from New York, Susan Arani, and she said she was our director of production and talent. And she said, Frank Jerkinian, parenthesis, the legendary ex-executive producer, former passed away about 10 years ago. Frank Cherkinian likes your work and wants to know if you have ever done golf. I'd been at CBS, ABC from 74 to 82, and then went to CBS. And I said, yes, I did probably 10 tournaments. And the next thing I know, I had Frank Cherkinian, the Ayatollah, Armenian American, little jaunty little guy, about 5 foot six, 5'5". And he's one of the few guys I could look down on. and he's so gruff. And he said, I want to hire you for golf, but I'm only going to start you out with five tournaments. Here are the five: Pebble Beach, Memorial, Jack's Tournament,
yep,
Byron Nelson Colonial. I lived in Dallas at the time, and we're going to add Memorial. And I Nancy and I had a couple of bottles of wine that night. I promise you, I've never. And then he said, I don't want you going into Pebble Beach, which is pretty high profile. I don't want you going in without having one of our telecasts under your belt. So I worked the Phoenix Open. And another part of that period of my life that I still vividly remember was I did go work Pebble Beach. I was at 15, and I took Pat Summerall to the airport to Monterey Airport to leave on Sunday. And Pat said, I can't imitate Pat. No one could. But what a tall, great, oh my God. Yeah. And he said, I know where they're going to put you, Augusta. I said, really, where? He said, you're going to work 13. Well, 13 is one of the most beautiful spots on a gorgeous golf course. And so that was, I did 13 for 2 years. And then Kenny Venturi announced that he wanted out of the tower. He wanted to come down and work 13. And then when they pass through 13, then get in the cart and go back and climb up and join Summerall. So I had 2 years at 13. I've worked every hole on the back nine now, the second nine. And there's no rough. And that's not, those are not fans. I'm getting ready to go to Augusta.
That's great. It's great. But you know, what I'm wondering about with Augusta is Vern Lundquist's, by the way, there's a book that Vern has out. So just so we're clear on this book.
Oh dear.
It's actually been out a while, but if you haven't read it yet, when you see what, you know, the conversation about Tiger possibly playing the Tiger tracker of the tail of the plane yesterday on social media, and your call of 2005 with the chip of like that, when you see him, well, first of all, you have to hope he plays next week.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
But do you two ever, just the two of you, sit and talk about that call, Vern?
We did briefly. I know Jack Nicklaus much, much more significantly than my relationship with Jack, and maybe age related, is closer. I'm closer to Jack, and that's not, you know, we're not arm around each other buddies.
Right.
But I don't know Tiger that well. I do. I'm not a collector of autographs, Brad, but that was a significant moment. So over this shoulder, I can look right back here, and there's a signed photograph from Tiger. Of the chip shot.
And you're giving your red shirt.
I treasure that. Now, you know, you might be able to tell in the background, this is my ego room.
Yeah, that's good. This is mine. It's not nothing compared to yours. It's fine. I have bobbleheads. You have stuff from Tiger. It's fine. I have a book, though. I do have a book from Vern Lundquist. So.
Look here. Bobblehead. That only looks like maybe.
What do you do when you get off?
Yeah, I have no hair.
When you get off the plane, what are you most looking forward to next week? The tournament starts. I'm sure it's the camaraderie with the crew. I'm sure there's that. But what do you walk around the course and say that's different, or it's just exactly the same? What do you do next week? Give the fans.
I will get in a golf cart on Tuesday. We're driving. We're 160 miles from Denver. Okay. So Nancy and I are driving down on Sunday. will fly on Monday. I'll be glued to the Final Four here on Saturday night, but I will miss the championship game. This happens every year because we have to fly, and there are no nonstops from Steamboat Springs to Augusta. So, you know, it's
right. That's a tough
Denver,
one.
Atlanta, Augusta. But on Tuesday morning, I'll get in the cart and reintroduce myself to the golf course. I checked the 10-day forecast about six times already this morning, and it looks terrific.
Good.
Thunderstorms Wednesday might affect the par three, but the rest of the week looks clear. And I hope this current storm that is going through and is impacting that part of the country right now, I hope it doesn't knock the azaleas and the magnolias and all the beauty of the flowers that I got. We'll find out. But what I do, Brad, is I drive just to re-familiarize myself and kind of soak it in. Again, I'll drive on the cart paths all the way around and just pay particular attention to 6 and 13, 6 and 16. But my gosh, 22 years, I kind of know them.
Yeah.
But that's my reintroduction. And Nance and I are going out to dinner with our senior vice president of production and personnel on Tuesday night. Wednesday, we start working, and we have a in-person attendance meeting at our new broadcast center, which is just spectacular. This will be our second year in it, and it's hard to describe. I mean, in my view, Augusta National is the best run tournament in the world, and they make sure that everything is first class in this. So anyway, we'll have a meeting there for an hour or so. That's everybody, production people and on the air. And then Thursday, we're on the air with ESPN and Thursday and Friday. And our coverage on the satellite channels will begin Monday. We have this, you know, featured groups on the range, Masters on the range, featured group, Amen Corner, 15 and 16. All those separate feeds are available beginning Monday. And
amazing.
It is amazing.
Are there players that you want to, in your space, especially at 16, not to say there's nothing, not a hole that's not important, but you're sitting there and as the tournament is unfolding, Do you need to know a little bit about every player in your preparation, or do you just let the story unfold?
No, I think you do. And we have a fellow named Rick Johns. I'm sorry. I haven't worked with him in a year. But he provides a booklet that thick. And it's a profile of every participant in Augusta. And it is a Bible. Rick Folio, I don't want to misstate who the guy is. He was Gary McCord's statistician and spotter. That ended in 1994. So,
yeah.
But it is like a Bible. And there's a big difference in preparing for a golf tournament, in my view, than there is basketball or football, because there's memorization. You've got to memorize the depth chart now, and basketball is a little more limited. But in golf, you don't know out of a field. I think they're 91 this year, and I hope Tiger is one of them. Just parenthetically,
yeah.
I read what Scott Van Pelt said. I didn't see it, but I read it. I don't know if you did. He said if Tiger shows up and plays, the other competitors can play in the nude. No one will notice.
That's a great line.
Yeah, it is.
That's a great line. Sounds like Scott. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, this is Jim, I think, Nance was the one. I believe he said after he said, "Hello, friends," I believe he said, "A tradition unlike any other." I believe Jimson came up with that. And it really, really is. And I've treasured every trip to Augusta since beginning in 83. And I will treasure this one.
That's great. By the way, Vern has a book. Make sure you get it. It is really good. And if you haven't been able to see it yet, it's out there. It is great to visit with you once again, Vern Lundquist. Have fun at the Masters. Thanks.